Today, in part three of our series, Women of the Old Testament, the subject is Sarah from the book of Genesis. Do you have the patience to wait on the promises of God? Are you inclined to take matters into your own hands? Well, thankfully, God is faithful in spite of our rebellion. Let's see how God shows up. Here's Pastor Seth.
When I think about living life on planet Earth, there are two things that I think about that are usually confusing for us as Christians and confusing for us as people. And that is, the first one is, what happens when the outcomes that we think ought to happen don't come? And that just keeps going on and on and on, and nothing really changes. And the second thing I think about that's really hard for us is the difference between our timing and God's timing. Have you noticed that the two can often be quite different? Outcomes and timing. Timing, when I think about this, you know, I have a hard time just waiting at a stoplight. As my family members can attest. Waiting. Well, apparently, I'm not the only one who has trouble with waiting. There was a Marine boot camp sergeant that was just horrific with the new recruits at boot camp. And he was yelling at the guys and cussing every word. I think he probably coined some new cuss words. And everybody and all the recruits just hated this drill sergeant. But he had one guy that he picked out to sort of be the focus of his intention on this guy, and just obliterated this poor young kid who was 18 years old. And finally, near the end of boot camp, he was standing in line. All the guys were there, and he went up to this one kid, and he said, "I'll bet you're waiting for the day I die. You can come and stand and dance on my grave." And without missing a beat, the kid said, "No, sir. I made myself a promise about a week ago. I'm never standing in a line after I get out of the Marines again." It'll be a long line, apparently. There is a lot of material about Sarah. And so we're just going to pick up sort of the main storyline as I see it. There are going to be some things, if you're familiar with her life, that we're not going to omit just because of time. But the story begins really in Genesis 12. And God comes to Abraham and gives him what we call the Abrahamic covenant, that there's going to be a son that's going to come through he and Sarah, and that eventually there's going to be a Messiah that's going to come through that lineage, and that there are going to be not just the one son, the heir, but that there are going to be a whole bunch of people that come out that are not, that we know, are not just a part of his lineage, although that was true. But God compares the descendants, not just physical, but spiritual descendants, to the sand of the sea and the stars of the sky. That includes folks like us who have come to faith in Christ. Now, that happens in Genesis 12. And Abraham is about 75 years old. And the years are a little bit different than what we are used to in our... So it's a little bit kind of hard to figure out just sort of biologically what was going on. Sarah was 65 years old, but we know that even at that point that she was considered one of the most beautiful women around. I can't mention this part of the story because of time, but there were a couple incidents that give indication of that. We come 10 years past the first Abrahamic covenant. Abraham, you'll have a son through Sarah. And 10 years of nothing. No son, no descendants, no spiritual descendants, no physical descendants, not even a descendant. Nobody. And we pick up the story in your handout in Genesis 15 after 10 years. After this, the word of the Lord came to Abram. Also, I should mention too, at the first part of the story, Abraham is called Abram, Sarah is called Sarai, or Sarah is called Sarai. The names are going to shift mid-through, but to avoid confusion, I'm just going to call them Abraham and Sarah. After this, the word of the Lord came to Abraham in a vision. "Do not be afraid, Abraham. I am your shield, your very great reward." Abraham has a question. Now that I have your attention, O sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless and the one who will inherit my estate is Eliezer of Damascus, meaning somebody that worked in his as one of the servants there. Abraham said, you have given me no children, so a servant in my household will be my heir. I was just saying, you know, 10 years ago you told me the same thing, and yet over the last 10 years there's been, as we would say, no outcome, and I'm kind of confused about your timing. But God comes back and gives him basically the same message. The word of the Lord came to him, this man, Eliezer, will not be your heir, but a son coming from your own body will be your heir. Now, if I was Abraham, I'd say, I got that the first time. It's good to hear it again. But when does that start, would be my question. And God took him outside and said, look up to the heavens. So this is happening at night. Look up to the heavens and count the stars, if indeed you can count them. Then he said to Abraham, so shall your offspring be. Now, God doesn't mention anything about timing here. Doesn't give him a calendar. Doesn't say how long this is going to be. As it comes to that part of timing, there is no information that God gives to Abraham about when this is going to happen. But verse 6, which is one of the most important verses in the Old Testament, Abraham believed the Lord, and God credited it to him as righteousness. This is the whole linchpin of we are saved through faith by grace. God simply gives us his righteousness rather than us trying to become righteous enough to be accepted by him. Now, it's easy to think of a story like this, Abraham and Sarah, as sort of a lab experiments or sort of people who are somehow either so far removed in the past that we don't think of them as persons, really. Or I remember at one point in my life when I was studying this, I thought of Abraham as sort of this super spiritual guy and Sarah as sort of this queen, a spiritual queen. And then, but as you read the story, you realize, not so much. And it reads a lot like people like us, you know, where they have some strengths, where you see great things that happen. And then you see just some bonehead, knucklehead, stupid things. You just go, how could somebody do that? But here we have, when I think about real people, I think about this issue of infertility. They're not getting any younger. 10 years without a child. When I think about this, I think about folks who've had miscarriages. We had two in our younger years. That's hard. That's hard. Now, thankfully, we were able to have to raise three. But to watch two like that is tough. And there have been people in our church where I certainly have experienced that. There are people that I think of in our church who have gone the in vitro route. Some of the folks have been successful and some of the folks have not. But when I think about those folks, what I think about is the pain, the waiting that goes for a long, long time of not having the outcome and the question of timing. And some of the folks that we know have adopted kids. Some have not. When I think about some of the folks that have adopted kids, there's a little bit more of the mystery that sort of surrounds this. You're sort of like, wow, maybe there's a big story being told here. One of the couples we know has adopted three different children from three different birth mothers. And so far, the mother and father that adopted the three kids have been able, listen to this, to include the birth mothers and some of the birth grandmothers in those kids' lives. You don't hear that very often. Another couple that we know adopted two children, and the two children ended up being highly special needs kids. Wow, maybe some of these puzzle pieces fit together in ways that we can't imagine. One couple I know that was going through infertility, it was so painful for them that if they knew that on a Sunday morning here, somebody was going to give an announcement about, we're pregnant, we're going to have a child, it was so painful that they would visit a sister church of ours just because it was so painful. It's not because they didn't love the folks, but this is just such raw pain. And I think about these two folks here, Abraham and Sarah, and I think about folks who've been in our church who've gone through something like this. And the pattern that you see here in their story goes something like this. God makes a promise. It's going to be a son through Abraham and Sarah. There's a long period of waiting, and the outcome is nothing. And then it starts again, like our chapter 15. Promise, covenant, reiterated, reassured, long time of waiting, nothing. And this causes, just like it does for you, situations where they may be a little bit different than infertility, but the wrestling match between God, what outcome should happen, and why is it different than what I wish would happen, and then the whole issue of timing to where this seems like this is a whole lot slower than it needs to be. There are probably things that come to your mind. Things you've wrestled with yourself, there are certainly things that come to my mind as well. Now, the story in chapter 16, again, is a real story with a real person. We're studying Sarah here. Sarah, Abraham's wife, had borne him no children, but she had an Egyptian maidservant named Hagar. Now, imagine you're Sarah, and you've watched other people in this extended family and the clan and the servants get married, and the wives give birth to children and raise them, and this goes on for 10 years. And you have a covenant promise that this is going to happen, but nothing, and nothing, and nothing for 10 years. What do you feel as a woman? What's going on inside of your heart? What do you want to do? What do you think? She had an Egyptian maidservant named Hagar. When I think about, one of the things I think about Sarah is unmet longings. What happens when we have unmet longings that just continue to be unmet? Certainly God could have brought the outcome sooner than he did. Is there something he's up to through unmet longings that's important for our transformation? Verse 2. So she said to Abraham, "The Lord has kept me from having children." Now, we have nothing in the record that suggests that she knew that directly. All we're left with is something like this. It hasn't happened. God must, for some reason, have said he's going to keep me from having children. Now, she doesn't know that. But she's speculating, or it's what she's allowed to do. But it appears to me through the text and through her life story that there's much more that's driving this than just speculation that God has done this. And that there's something inside of her that God is trying to transform. And you see this in several different things in her story. You see a demanding spirit that she has toward God, a demanding spirit she has towards Abraham. You're going to see a demanding and contentious spirit that she has towards Hagar. You don't see anything related here to praying to God or asking for his direction, getting godly counsel, or submitting to God. The record is non-existent on any of those things except for the demand. So she gives the idea to Abraham, "Sleep with my maidservant. Perhaps I can build a family through her." Now, in our culture, we have something sort of like this, surrogate mother, where another gives birth to a mom for the husband and mom who can't. But adultery is not involved in that. Here in this case, this is what Sarah comes up with as the solution, is adultery. Now, apparently, when she talks to Hagar, the handmaiden, about this, Hagar is not all that excited about being what we would call a surrogate mom. And you can't really blame her in this situation. We're going to talk about Hagar next week, so we're going to look at the underside of this coin with her story next week. But Hagar is a woman, I surmise, who is maybe a little bit older than Sarah. not only childless, but husbandless. She has unmet longings too. And she sees an opportunity here to get something that she wants, and that is a husband. And so between verse 2 and 3, the proposition changes. Notice carefully. So after Abraham had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarah, his wife, took her Egyptian maidservant Hagar and gave her to her husband. Notice how the sentence ends. To be his wife. Not surrogate mother. Not just, would you just do this favor for us so that we can have the child we look for. Apparently there's some negotiating going on between the two women. And Sarah was so hell-bent on getting what she wanted, that baby, no matter what it took, that she agreed to that. Adultery and polygamy were the two things that she suggested as a way of solving this problem. Abraham slept with Hagar, and she conceived. Now, this brings up a whole lot of things. Like, God, didn't you give them commands? And they, certainly they knew about the Ten Commandments, and adultery is a bad thing. And certainly they knew about Genesis, one man, one woman for life. Polygamy is a bad idea. I love my wife, but you know, I'm happy to have one wife. I cannot imagine, too. In fact, my mother warned me of this when I was a little boy. She said, Seth, you never want to be in a situation where there are two women in the same kitchen. That was her short way of saying, this is a problem. Do you not want to go in this direction? Yeah. Sarah went flying right past these commands, these big picture things. Don't do this commands. The commands are meant to protect us from doing stupid stuff. And she went right through the commands. And sometimes when we go driving right through the commands, all hell is unleashed. And that's what happened in this story here. All hell was unleashed. Verse 4 continues. When she, here meaning Hagar, knew that she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. Now, how long does it take, ladies, before you generally know you're pregnant? How many weeks? 6 weeks? Something like that? That's probably what I hear on average, something like that. How do you go from being the maid servant to despising your mistress in 6 weeks? Well, I suspect, kind of reading between the lines, that there was some drama going on between these two women. Prior to this, probably some envy, unmet longings, and jealousy, and those kinds of things. But then suddenly the life shifts for Hagar, because now she not only has a husband like Sarah, but now she has a child unlike Sarah. What happens in the human heart when suddenly you've been on the outside and now you are the up top person, but perhaps not treated as the up top person, which we'll look at again next week. Something goes on in the heart of resentment and bitterness and maybe fury, and maybe you get to a place where you despise this other person. If you've ever dealt with some stepmom situations or stepdad situations or stepparent situations, you have some idea of the hornet's nest that was unleashed by this idea of Sarah and agreed to by Abraham. Now, she was just bound and determined that this was going to be, no matter what God said about this. And what she did not know is that she enrolled in the school of hard knocks. But she didn't just enroll herself in the school of hard knocks. She enrolled Abraham in the school of hard knocks. And she enrolled Hagar in the school of hard knocks. And she enrolled Hagar's son to be born, Ishmael, in the school of hard knocks. And she enrolled her son to be born much later in the school of hard knocks. And that classroom that began about 4,000 years ago is still playing out in world history today, mostly in the Middle East. But we see it spreading all around the world. What does God do when we just are bound and determined to have our way no matter what God says? Well, there are different responses that God does, but I think he did something of a response here like he did in the book of Psalms with the people who were traveling around in the wilderness wandering before they went into the promised land. Psalm 106:12 says, then they believed his words. So for part of the time, the people were following God, hearing his words and doing what he said. They sang his praise. Verse 13, but they soon forgot his works. They did not wait for his counsel. But they had a wanton craving, unmet longings, in the wilderness, and they put God to the test in the desert. So what did God do? He gave them what they asked for, but sent a wasting disease upon them. My mother used to say this, Seth, be careful what you ask for. This is certainly the case in Psalms, certainly the case with Sarah, because usually what comes is a package deal, which is certainly what happened here. Verse 5, then Sarah said to Abraham, you are responsible. It's your fault. This is probably not the first time Abraham had heard that from her. Seemed like it just came right out. You are responsible for the wrong. I am suffering. Well, you're not the only one suffering here, but don't think that was in her purview. I put my servant in your arms, and now that she knows she's pregnant, she despises me. I just see, you know, on Seinfeld, I remember one episode of the cat fight. I don't know if you, Seinfeld, you know, cat fight. I just think about this here. And then she says, may the Lord judge between you and me. Now, if I'd been Abraham and I knew God to some extent and she said that to me, I would have been going like this. I want to get out of the way because I think a lightning bolt's getting ready to come down out of the sky and evaporate somebody. This is one mad woman. Hey, what does Abraham do? He does the thing that most of us guys do. He wimps out. Your servant is in your hands. You know, do with her whatever you think best. You know, don't expect me to take any responsibility here. I'm not getting in the middle of this thing. Then Sarah mistreated Hagar so that she fled from her. Now, she was determined to have her way. And when the final analysis came, the word here that just stands out to me is alienation. She has alienated herself from Abraham. She's alienated herself from Sarah. I mean, from Hagar. And Hagar is going to be alienated from Abraham. Sounds like a lot of alienation going on. The two boys that are going to be born are going to be alienated from one another all of their lives and down through all of their posterity. Alienation. Now, after this debacle, what happens? 13 years of nothing. Now, think about this. There are things in your life where you want outcomes and you're hoping for an outcome and you wonder about God's timing. What if he said, I'm not going to say anything for another 13 years? Could that happen to you? Could that happen to me? Happened to these folks. God also said to Abraham, this is 13 years later, he comes again, as for Sarah, your wife, you are no longer to call her Sarai, which is a word, sort of a cute word for like your princess or my princess, you know, kind of a name you'd call your sweetie. Her name will be Sarah, which is the same root word princess, but now it's not just your princess, but the princess of many, as we'll see. I will bless her and will surely give her a son by her, give you a son by her. I will bless her so she will be the mother of nations. Kings of people will come from her. So as you think about the Messiah, which is pretty amazing, 1,500 years of Old Testament history, you can trace the lineage of Jesus all the way back to here. What's being prophesied here, you can trace through historical record all the way down to Jesus. That's pretty astounding. This is not just some guy that just pops up with some big ideas, you know, a couple thousand years later and says, you know, hey, follow me and worship me. And then, but then God says, kings will come from her. You can check the record. And that certainly happened as well through this particular lineage. This is just one of the amazing things about the Bible that sort of gives proof and attestation to itself through this. Now, imagine that you've made this big debacle. And 13 years pass, and you wonder if God has given up on you. What a mess. How could I have been so stupid? She probably thought that. He probably thought that. Hagar probably thought that. Now, if God showed up again and spoke to you, what would you be thinking and feeling? Now, I don't know about you, but I identify with this. I would be ashamed. I would look back on the junk that I did, the decisions I made, and I would go, I am a moron. How could I have done that? And I would be wondering, God, are you sure that you've come to the right address? You know, there are other guys that are, you know, probably doing a lot better than I am on this. I don't know why you're still going to, you haven't given up on us, have you? I would be sort of that confused and ashamed. And yet, almost the opposite happens. It's almost like he gives them a promotion. You were once, you know, Sarah was just once your princess, but she's going to be the princess of nations. And there's a picture here of just, you expect to be called to the principal's office, and instead, you've just been given a scholarship to the university. Something along the line happens here. Abraham, in verse 17, fell face down. He's dumbfounded by this. He laughed and said to himself, will a son be born to a man 100 years old? He's 99 years old now. Will Sarah bear a child at the age of 90? She's 89 at this time. And Abraham said to God, if only Ishmael might live under your blessing. God, I know there's an outcome supposed to be here, but does it have to be through Sarah? Why can't we count Ishmael? And then chapter 18 begins, the Lord appeared to Abraham near the great trees of Mamre while he was sitting at the entrance to his tent in the heat of the day. Abraham looked up and saw three men standing nearby. Now, when God makes an appearance, sometimes he makes an appearance as a giant soldier or a giant angel. Here, there are three personages that suggest something of the Trinity, and they are making a personal visit, not a scary big angel, not a scary big soldier thing, where they end up sitting down and having a meal together. You think about friendship and fellowship. Abraham's called the friend of God, and I wonder how much of that happens right here when he realizes something. Instead of being called to the principal's office, he's invited to have a meal, enjoy fellowship. And then verse 9, while he's outside, Sarah is in the tent behind where the three guys are. And they ask Abraham, where's your wife Sarah? And he says, they're in the tent. Now, she's right in the tent right here. Can you imagine if you were Sarah after what you that whole debacle? And it looks like the Lord has shown up and asked, where is Sarah? Now, the first thing that goes through my mind when I think about this, I was in junior high. And back in junior high, if they wanted to call somebody to the principal's office, they did it over the loudspeaker that went into every room. Didn't matter what room it was in the whole school, 7th grade, 8th grade, 9th grade. And I got called to the principal's office on occasion. And I remember one in particular where there was a girl behind me that never got in trouble. I needed to learn some lessons from her, but I never did. And I remember suddenly the loudspeaker, may I have your attention, please? Of course, all the classes stop. Will Seth Gatchell please report to the principal's office? And I go, oh, no, they found out. You know, so I'm getting out of my chair, and I hear the girl behind me mutter, not again. I think I would have sort of felt that if I was Sarah here. The Lord said, I will surely return to you about this time next year. And now he's speaking to Abraham, but Sarah can hear. And Sarah, your wife, will have a son. The writer says, now Sarah was listening at the entrance to the tent, which was behind him. And then the writer makes sure that we don't forget this. Abraham and Sarah are already old, well advanced in years. Sarah was past the age of childbearing. No human way it's going to happen. Verse 12. So Sarah laughed to herself, and she thought, after I'm worn out and my master is old, will I now have this pleasure? Now, she's been through this for about 24 years. She has now given up on any physical way of having a child. And the scripture records two important things here that she did. She laughed to herself, meaning the fellows could not physically hear. And she had a thought, not spoken, after I'm worn out, my master's old, will I now have this pleasure? Then the Lord said to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh and say, will I really have a child now that I am old? In other words, even though she just thought the thought, it was crystal clear to the guy standing there, one of those three guys. Will I really have a child now that I am old? She must have been dumbfounded. How did he read my mind? How did he know I laughed under my breath? The fellow continues, is anything too hard for the Lord? I'll return to you at the appointed time next year, and Sarah will have a son. Now, what's going on there? Part of Sarah's transformation is going on. Her laughter had been a laughter either of contempt, yeah, like, right, sure, this is going to happen, or a laughter that's preposterous, oh, yeah, uh-huh, I don't think so, or a laughter of scorn. You know, this is some kind of just terrible divine joke that's being played on the two of us. And this has affected the drama that's going on for all these years between her and Hagar, and now Hagar's son Ishmael, who's coming up on age 13. And God is interested in changing this woman, transforming her, taking this resentment and bitterness that's in her, this contempt, and exposing it to the light of day where she can see it in herself. Almost like she's standing in front of a mirror inside that tent. She's been tested on it. It's there. But she's not really that excited about hearing that. Verse 15, is anything too hard for the Lord? I'll return to you at the appointed time next year, and Sarah will have a son. Now, remember, the guys were talking to Abraham, but Sarah thought that the guys were talking to her. Look what the next verse says. Sarah was afraid, and she lied and said, I didn't laugh. Why'd she do that? More transformation going on? Lying to God? Does that need to be exposed? Apparently so, because he said, yes, you did laugh, meaning one of the messengers. Something's being exposed. In the light of her looking bad and being bad, God is still working out his covenant promise through them. Verse 21, I skip forward in the story. Now, the Lord was gracious to Sarah, as he had said. The Lord did to Sarah what he had promised. She becomes pregnant. Sarah became pregnant, bore a son to Abraham in his old age, at the very time God had promised him. Now, this is the first time, other than the messengers, where a specific time was mentioned. Nebulous time for 23 years. Specific time, bingo, 9 months later. Verse 3, Abraham gave the name Isaac to the son Sarah, to the son Sarah bore him, Isaac. The name means laughter. Laughter. Now, we know that Abraham laughed at some point in the story, but we also know that Sarah laughed several times, and there are different kinds of laughter. As you all know, and I know, in the first part of Sarah's life, there was the laughter of scoffing and contempt, rolling the eyes. Oh, yeah, sure. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's going to happen to me. That's preposterous. But now, when this has finally happened and she's eating some humble pie, her laughter is very different. It's the laughter of something of joy. Oh, my gosh, it really happened. And there is a laughter of, I read here, something of a humble gratitude, like, oh, golly, who would have imagined? I didn't, but I'm so grateful. And then the other laughter I hear is going to be that long laughter after for the next 28 years of her life when she thinks about this and she calls out her son's name, Isaac, laughter, laughing, where she's going to go. There's going to be that knowing laugh. Yep. 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 I know something about who God is through all this story. There's an eagle, a time in the eagle's life when it's sort of like a boy in high school where he goes through the growth cycle and he gets much, eagle has a growth spurt, eats too much, and he can't fly nearly as far and as fast as he once did. And sort of God takes over in this development process, and the eagle goes up above a cliff or top of a cliff, makes a nest, an eyrie we call it, and it goes into the cliff, and it begins this strange thing, almost like a diet, where it doesn't eat any food, almost to lose the weight again, where it can fly, its body can catch up with the growth. And it does something else. The eagle begins to pull out the wing feathers of its own wings where it's impossible to fly. So even if the eagle wanted to fly, to take matters into his own hands, he couldn't. And during that long process of waiting, the eagle loses weight, the eagle is transformed, and over time, that long wait, the eagle grows back new feathers, wing feathers, until at the right time, the eagle is strong enough to live its life. That's something of the picture of what God did with Sarah and Abraham. That's something of the story that I relate to. And in your own life, as you are waiting outcomes, and you have unmet longings that you wish would happen, and you're wondering about God's timing, all of these three things are a part of Sarah's story. And don't be surprised if they're a part of your story as well. Let's pray together. Father, would you help us to see our story clearly, to see you're working with Abraham and Sarah, and not to be all that surprised at your dealings with us sometimes of waiting and unmet longings and uncertain outcomes. Would you draw your people to you? Help us to see how you are trying to draw us to yourself as more important even than good outcomes and even timing that we would appreciate.
We at Pacific Church of Irvine invite you to join us every Sunday at 9:30. You can also visit our website at pacificchurch.com.